population tends to shift more toward older citizens, and that there might be a population shift from vehicles to more of a pedestrian and bicycle traffic.
You mean as people get older, they use more bicycles?
No, the main thing was as they get older, there will be possibly less automobile drivers.
Right.
They're looking at demographics, looking at the comprehensive growth plan, and they're going to be factoring in a disability layer to allow for people that either have to ride, it's not the regular bus service, but they have these other bus services that get you from your home to medical appointments and things like that.
Yeah, C-Van.
Yeah.
Transit.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I had that slipped my mind, the name of that. But I was basically impressed with the approach that the group seems to be planning to take in terms of looking at demographics, including a disability layer, and also their public participation plan. So there'll be more on that in the future. And so I'm not sure exactly where that's going to go, but it was good to hear that they're considering those things. So this was the first meeting, and it was just basically going over a presentation and then dealing with questions and input from the group.
All right. I'm going to open up to questions first, but just a request, if you could offline when Tanya's back in town, if you could maybe coordinate with her. I don't know when the next sounding board is going to be, or if there is going to be another.
It's every third Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah, so as soon as she gets back, I've sent her an email, so when she gets back, I can go ahead and debrief her on this first meeting.
All right, thank you.
Can you, Jackie or Franklin, can you send me some information again on that transportation meeting?
Yes, I will.
And Franklin, I'd just like to see who the members are.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions of Franklin? I think Amy had mentioned she has an update, so why don't we cover that now, and then we'll go back into our icebreaker part of the agenda.
Okay. These are talking points from Dr. Melnick at Public Health that were updated yesterday. Statewide COVID case counts continue to decline. State case rates are declining across all ages, except people 70 years and older, among whom rates have stayed mostly flat since March. Number of hospital bed patients statewide is declining. In Clark County, the numbers are also decreasing. And regarding the vaccine, 421,000 doses have been administered in Clark County. And 230,000 Clark County residents have received at least one dose, which is 58% of Clark County residents 16 years and older, which is 46% of the total population. Public health continues efforts to make COVID-19 vaccine easily accessible by hosting vaccination clinics throughout the county. This Wednesday, Public Health will return to Ridgefield High School to provide Pfizer's second doses to those who received first doses on May 26th. We will also offer Pfizer first doses and Johnson & Johnson. Public Health is also vaccinating people who are homebound and those who are unhoused. Monday, we returned to a local church that provides services to people who are unhoused and offer Johnson & Johnson vaccinations. They're working on plans to return to a local shelter to provide Johnson & Johnson vaccines next week. Public health is vaccinating homebound residents as we receive requests. And they're planning on vaccinating 5 homebound residents this week. And with vaccines now readily available at local pharmacies and medical offices, public health and its partners have decided to close the Tower Mall site at the end of the month. Public health, they mounted an incident management team. Lost my video. I don't know how this happened. Back. The incident management team response began in January with the arrival of a federal type 1 team in Southwest Washington. In late February, the team transitioned to working with the Southwest Washington regional incident management team. The regional team has been staffed largely by Clark County Public Health, with some additional contracted staff experienced in incident command. It's working on a demobilization plan that will integrate COVID vaccine response work into public health programs. I listened in on the calls in the beginning in January, and everybody was singing the blues about not having enough vaccines, and that's no longer true. So that's the update.
All right, thank you. Any questions of Amy? Are we going to reach 70% level of at least one vaccine by June 30th?
Doesn't sound like it.
Well, that's Amy, too bad.
Amy, I was told by someone that works for the VA that they are still trying to count the numbers of VA veterans who had the vaccines. They were eliminated initially and went on in the full count. I don't know whether that count is still going on or not, but certainly would increase the numbers. Have you heard about that? I don't know whether you heard me or not, Amy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were asking Megan. No, I have not heard of
okay.
that.
You haven't heard of that. Okay.
No. Nope.
I mean, it's positive news if that's true, because I didn't get on account of. Okay. Thanks.
Sure. All right. Any other questions? All right. I'm going to turn it back to Jenna.
All right. So we're going to do a quick sound check. I think this is Pam who's called in. So Pam, or whoever's on the phone, I'm going to.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we've got an echo though. I'm trying to figure out why. Pam, do you want to try again?
Yeah, you have an echo too.
So Jenna, it looks like she's joined twice and by phone.
Pam, you might need to turn one of the sets of speakers off on your computer.
Okay, let me try this. Okay, Pam, now we're not going to be able to hear her. Let's see.
It seemed like her sound was coming out of one.
Right. Yeah, we're getting. Hey, Pam, if you are on your phone, you probably want to hang up. You are on your phone. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can hear you, but there's an echo. So if you can turn off speakers on any of the computers you're logged in on.
Is there still an echo?
Yes.
Well, this is a mystery.
I wonder if she hangs up the phone now.
Well, no, hold on. I'm going to try to pick out one of Pam. I'm going to see if this works. Okay.
So you removed me from the meeting.
Right, but you're still here. You're somehow logged in twice.
Well,
Jackie, can you keep working with Pam on the side? Because I may have just, I kicked off her visual, I think, is what I just did.
Okay, I think she needs to maybe come off and come back in.
Okay, do you want me to completely log out and come back in?
Let's try that.
Goodbye.
Bye, Pam. Thank you all, everyone, for patience. We can never predict when WebEx will act up.
You can predict that it will.
Well, that's true. So also just a few logistical things and then we'll get into the agenda. If you need to get up and go to the bathroom or anything, just do what you need to do. We are planning for a break about halfway through the agenda, but otherwise, you know, take care of your needs. If you need to walk away and come back, do that. You also may notice, you can see that we have members of the public who may be listening in and you can see them today. We're in a different type of WebEx meeting because we're hoping to use some breakout groups later on during the retreat. And so just so you know, if there are folks who you don't recognize, they're probably members of the public who are listening in to your meeting. So Jackie and I, we're going to do our best to facilitate your retreat so that Chuck and Larry can fully participate in the conversation with the rest of you. So let us know if we're doing anything that you don't like, and we'll adjust. And so I think with that, we want to start off with some icebreakers introductions. This is Cass's first meeting. So Cass, we wanted to give you just a couple of minutes to just introduce yourself to this group. And then we've got three icebreaker questions. So I think for you, Cass, your introduction is primary. And then if you wanna do a couple of these icebreakers too at the end of your introduction, that's great. And then we'll go to the rest of the group who will do briefer introductions and answer the icebreakers.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Hello, everyone. I am Cass Friedland, and I'm thrilled to be on the commission and to be in part of your really essential work. Very quickly about me. I moved to Vancouver a little over 2 years ago because our kids, who are based in the Pacific Northwest, had told us that we would love it out here, and we pretty much gave everything away. Jumped in a car and drove out here, and they were absolutely right. You have to listen to your kids. It is fabulous being out here. I'm a Midwesterner by birth, was born in Chicago, but lived in Michigan and a variety of other Midwestern places, but spent the sort of the last 30 years on the East Coast and Virginia, New York City, and then finally Baltimore before moving here, both working professionally and raising our kids. And I've worked in a variety of different community-based organizations, but the last dozen years or so, I worked in two different colleges, and I ran offices that built strong and ethical community-based partnerships with a variety of different organizations, with schools, faith communities, adult living facilities, organizations focused around the disability community, just to name a few. And so my work really embraces principles of equity, respectful community practice. In Vancouver, I am currently working through the pandemic, part of the volunteer crew leaders for Friends of Trees, which is an organization that I love. And I guess just sort of as a thumbnail sketch, certainly if anyone has any questions, and over time, you know, I'm certainly willing to share more. I'm just really thrilled to be here, and hope that my sort of unique path through this world can in some way enhance the work that you're doing. Let's see, and if I could pick an icebreaker, having been in colleges, I'm really used to icebreakers. So let's see, what is a fun and interesting fact about my hometown? I'll pick that one. I consider East Lansing, Michigan to be my hometown, which is Michigan State University. So I guess I don't really know what's interesting about it, except the fact that the town expanded every year from about 30,000 people to about 100,000 people when the students came into town. And there were definitely growing pains growing up. And I also saw a lot of interesting things from older people and college students that I learned not to do when I became older as well. So there you go.
All right. Thank you, Cass.
Certainly.
And why don't we can go around the group to do brief introductions to Cass, answer these icebreaker questions. And let's see, I'm just going to call you all as I see you on my screen. So Amy.
Thank you. Cass, one thing you didn't mention, which we figured out when I first met you is that I attended one of the colleges where you worked, probably the last college you worked at. And now I find out you were at Michigan State, where my husband once taught math.
Oh, so, wow.
You know, we're related somehow. A fun, interesting fact about my hometown is that it was the home of the Annan Flag Factory, which made most of the flags in the United States, including the huge one that flies over the George Washington Bridge. The best thing about my hometown, though, is that it was centered around a park with a lake. And in the winter, if the lake was frozen hard enough for us to go ice skating, there'd be a loud blast of a horn and school would let out early so we could all go home and get our skates and skate on the lake. I'm most proud of the Commission on Aging's accomplishments in the area of housing. I know there's a long way to go, but I think it's wonderful. And if I could pick up a new skill in an instant, it might be an old skill that I've let go dormant, which is playing piano. I have a piano, I have piano music, and I don't know, once a month I sit at the piano for 10 minutes and say, gee, I should do this every day. So I definitely need a teacher, and maybe that'll be this year. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. Chuck?
Well, I'll kind of jump around here. So Cass, we met last week in your onboarding meeting. I guess if I could pick up a new skill in an instant, I'd have to try to figure out how on the third Wednesday of each month I could clone myself. I'm on two commissions and have found myself to be chair, co-chair, both of them, and they overlap on the third Wednesday of the month. I'm proud of pretty much everything the Commission on Aging has accomplished. We've successfully pivoted in the COVID era, and we're out there doing some amazing communications and liaison roles and all sorts of things. So I'm proud of the whole commission. Now, about my hometown, I guess that's where we grew up, right? I grew up in the Detroit, Michigan area. And one of the places that we moved to before I went off to college, was a little town called Wixom, Michigan, where they used to make a lot of Ford cars. Then I went to this little university called University of Michigan, which happens to be one of the arch rivals of Michigan State University. So go blue, and that's all I have to say about that.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. Franklin.
I basically have worked in, volunteered in different neighborhood associations and with the police and fire department, and it's really been an eye-opener. One of the things that I've really enjoyed, this is not my hometown, but one of the things that I really enjoy about Vancouver, I grew up in Portland, and Vancouver is always the place that I drive through on the way to Seattle. And I really appreciated all the opportunities that Vancouver provides citizens to be engaged in government and in some of the formal processes. One of the skills, I'm kind of on the track with Amy on one of the skills I'd like to pick up. I just bought a piano recently, and I'm in the process of making a music studio so that I can hopefully not run everybody else out of my home. The thing I'm most proud about on the commission is I was really impressed with the way the commission paused and really paid attention to the impacts of COVID and really took time to bring people in and understand from food delivery services to seniors, the isolation and so forth. And I've really been touched and appreciative of the depth of which we've addressed those issues and will continue to address them hopefully in the coming year. An interesting fact about my hometown, I grew up in Portland and then I left and I've been in a number of different places. But one of the things that I'm most fascinated about is the Fremont Bridge. I used to work as a draftsman in a metallurgical company that was ended up being right under the bridge. And one of the things that a lot of people may not realize is that the design of that bridge was tried twice before in major metropolitan areas, and it failed. And so when they started to lift that middle section of the Fremont Bridge, I was back in Portland, and my office window, I could look out and watch the progress of that bridge raising every day. And I was kind of holding my breath to make sure that it didn't fail the way it did the previous two times. So I've been impressed with that the engineers got it right this time.
Thanks, Franklin. Larry?
Yeah, I'll start with the first question. If I had to pick a new skill, it's probably a golfer. to learn that skill where I could play, you know, in the amateur ranks and be pretty good at it. Lately, I've been on a golf course, and I think I've been more of a participant than I have been a player. And it's a little frustrating trying to do that, and I thought about that. It's a skill that maybe I should have worked a little bit more harder about, even though I've played golf on and off most of my life. What is the fun or interesting fact? Well, I come from many hometowns. I'm a product of my dad was in the military, professional Navy, and then a school teacher for about 20 years, high school. So I've lived in about five, six different countries because I went in the military as well, although my dad was a little upset when I went into the Army instead of the Navy. But I've learned to appreciate various things. Probably the most rewarding thing is for me is to reflect on your country. I lived in Washington, D.C., and I was born in Washington, D.C., so it has a lot of meaning. But when I was stationed there, I was stationed at the Pentagon. And, of course, I rode by many different days of Arlington National Cemetery, and both my parents are interned at the National Cemetery. So it has a lot of meaning to me and something of very importance. What I'm most proud of, Commission, I'll be 79 years old in the 1st of October, and I hang around with a lot of seniors. And I've had that experience when I was on city council as well, that I am really happy where we are in 2012 and with the push of Mark Bolt to make sure we have a commission on aging. We have a growing aging population that concerns me very much so, their involvement, the services, and really reaping the benefits from that age group of their wisdom, experience, and expertise. Just hang around a senior when they're around elementary kids and listen to the conversation that goes back and forth and the experience that those kids gain from being with a senior that's been out there and done things in life and has lived life. And I think that's so important. So the commission on aging really becomes valuable as making sure that seniors are taken care of and that we properly utilize their skills and expertise. And I think we miss a golden opportunity of not promoting that and getting them involved and encourage them to get active. And I realize there's many volunteers, most in the nonprofits are seniors. But at the same time, we have a big challenge ahead of us with the growth of seniors, living longer, most seniors living into their 90s now and are still active, but have so much to offer our community. That's me.
Thanks, Larry. Megan? And if you're trying to speak, oh, there we go.
To turn it off just because I was having bandwidth problems. So right now, especially, I am down at the San Diego-Mexico border doing some immigration health assessments and working. So the skill I really need is to speak multiple languages, including Portuguese and Russian and a lot of languages I didn't know I was going to need this week. So I wish for that almost every day that I would was one of those language people, but I'm not. I'm like Larry, I've got a million hometowns and I continue to seem to collect them. I guess I'm going to switch the question a little bit. I try to go to a new country every year because I plan to live 200 and I want to say that I've been to 100 countries. So I'm on track so far. And what am I proud about the Commission on Aging? Well, first of all, is that it exists because in so many communities and places, like there isn't such a, and that it's so respected and has made itself so valuable and important. So I just think that's really remarkable when you look at a lot of other communities that really aren't focusing on healthy aging, which is so important. So, and welcome, Cass. I also love your name.
Thank you.
There's a good story behind it.
All right, thanks, Megan. And Pam, let's see if we can hear you.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
It took my 14-year-old grandson to come in and get that part working for me. He can't help me with the video, so I will be invisible to him today. If I could pick up a new skill in an instance, I would like to paint, specifically water or oil. It's something that I really admire in other people, and I wish I could do it myself. Fun and interesting fact about my hometown, I was raised in Westland, Oregon, and then we raised our family there. And over the 40 plus years, saw that city go from a blue collar to paper mill town, working class, to really a much more gentrified community. It's a very different community now than when I was raised there. Since moving to Ridgefield, coming to Ridgefield was like going back to the Westland I remembered as a kid. So it's been interesting to watch that. Most proud of the commission, I think the ability of the commission to quickly pivot this last year and focus on the COVID-19 and its impact on seniors. I think the commission has been very nimble with that. So that's mine.
Great. Thanks, Pam. All right. I think we got everyone. So we're going to keep moving along. So thank you all for sharing. Okay. So I know there's going to be some slides with a lot of text, but we'll read things out loud. So don't worry about reading it all. But we wanted to shift gears and sort of do a check-in on how this year is going. And so thank you all for responding to that pre-retreat survey. So what we've got here are excerpts from the responses to the question that was basically, you know, how do you feel like COA's work is going this year? So just wanted to share this, and then we'll have some discussion on anything that you all want to change up moving forward. So I'll just sort of highlight some of the stuff that's in the text here. So the new approach is engaging and informative. It may be more effective if the panelists and moderators are coming in focused with their points on specific policy changes we need to get to a goal tied to the topic being discussed. Some of the sessions were focused purely on information sharing about what's happening in our community, but if we're truly to be effective at our task, we might want to become far more focused on influencing specific policy barriers to getting to an ideal state for older adults. We've got a lot of very well considering COVID, good, going well, doing very well. Speakers and discussions have been thought-provoking. We have a great team and it's going great. I've learned so much from visiting the meeting notes from earlier meetings. The visiting guests have deepened my understanding of Clark County services for the aging population. I've been able to share those insights with others. And I think we've shown flexibility and adaptability and figuring out things as we go along. And I like the opportunity to get various members involved in each of the fireside chat programs and facilitation. And excellent speakers with good experience and expertise. Okay, so that's just a lot really fast, but it sounds overall like people are pretty happy with how things are going, but maybe a few suggestions in there as well. So I'll let you just sit with that for now. Okay, so keeping that in mind, we also just want to sort of flash up the calendar for what's left in the year. Let's see, we've got our speakers all lined up for July and August. So we've got a food focus for July, a social determinants of health focus in August. And then in September, and October, we haven't done the outreach yet to speakers. And I think there's been some questions, discussion on exactly what the focus should be. The September topic was initially intended as healthy and connected communities, intersections and opportunities for social connections. And the October topic was going to be personal economics and financial recovery. In November, we don't have a topic. The one thing we do know is that's when the Silver Citizen Award would be presented. We typically take a break in December, and then you'd be presenting your recommendations to the County Council in January. So with that in mind, and I can flip back here as needed, that the next question was sort of like, so is there anything you want to change moving forward for the rest of the year? So whether that's, you know, topic wise, things you want to cover, or, you know, logistically how we're doing business, things like that. So we had a question like that in the survey. So I've got some of those responses up on the screen, but I think maybe I'll just pause there and open it up for anyone who wants to chime in on anything you'd like to see change. And also feel free to take a minute to scan what others have written as well.
So Jenna, I know that Tanya had emailed separately about whether we want to look at that issue on the homelessness, the pressure on affordable housing for seniors and maybe some programs that might be available. That I think was in possibly as a replacement for our September topic, and it might actually be timely to merge in the November topic, which was the finance budgets strategy for older citizens coming out of, you know, trying to recover from the pandemic economic effects. So I guess I don't know if that was shared with the other commissioners, but I don't know if that worked its way into that fourth bullet as you go down.
Mm-hmm. In here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had other folks raised, yeah, in the comments, the issue of homelessness. And then I think other specific topical items here, yeah, around also low-income housing, as well as some other items related to the pandemic as well. Delivery of services, internet access. So Chuck, so we've got, I think it's, what is it? September, October, and November we have to work with. So are you thinking sort of this housing homelessness topic added as an additional item, or to do it instead of that other one you and Tanya were working on?
Well, I think Tanya suggested in replacement of what we were working on before, because that one, it's been a struggle to try to get guests. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking that, you know, we've got Jackie leading the housing relief or housing options study. I know City of Vancouver has been working on houselessness, affordable housing, changes in code, dealing with affordable housing and developing affordable housing. It might be advantageous to bring up that subject in September, maybe get Brian Snodgrass from the City of Vancouver, or who's leading the home program there? Why am I forgetting her name? Peggy Sheehan.
Yeah, Peggy would be perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
The city's just hired a someone locally to do the homeless, a new manager for that position. And I think Spinelli.
Jamie Spinelli.
Yeah, she heads that up. So, you know, both her and Peggy Sheehan be great.
Yeah, if they're able to kind of focus on the older citizen part of the population, because I know it has impacted people.
Okay. Anyone have any concerns with doing that swap or anything else you want to add?
I personally, I think that's a really good idea. That's a topic that we need to pay attention to. Thank you for bringing that out.
Okay. Anyone, anything else, either topically or any sort of logistical, how the commission does its business, changes you want to recommend? All right, well, I'll keep us moving, but if you think of anything, Jackie and I are happy to hear ideas anytime. And if you come up with a great way to do something differently, we're happy to receive any feedback whenever you all have it. Okay, so I think just a few more logistical items to go over. Oh, I forgot, there's a little bit more feedback here. Lots of encouragement, thinking things are going well. This one was from Nancy, also raising housing concerns as well. So that seems in line with what was just discussed. And we'll make sure you all can get a copy of these slides so you can
you can look at some people's comments in more detail too.
All right, so
what was that?
Can I make a quick comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Franklin.
I just want to thank you and Jackie. You guys have really held us together during the COVID, and I thought that we were just going to kind of die in the water, but you really appreciate what you and Jackie have done, facilitating the technology and doing all the work to make us look good. So I just want to say thank you to both of you again.
Thank you, Franklin.
Yeah. Jenna?
Yeah.
Yeah, just one thought. I know it's embedded in what we do, but it would sure, because I get a lot of questions on this, is the housing accommodations for seniors. You know, you have senior housing, you have memory care. There's so many different housing options for seniors, depending on where they are in their lives. Is get some clarity. What are the standards for those? What that does that look like? Because it becomes, impactful when it comes to visitations and so forth. And there is a lot of confusion because there's many different specialties of housing out there that are options for seniors, to include home care, to include adult care facilities that house up to, I think, 6. But just some clarity around that and what that includes and the parameters that go with living there.
Okay. That's great. I think Jackie and I probably know some folks that we could consult to help with that. Yeah. All right. Yeah, Franklin?
I appreciate the comment that you made, Larry, but I want to make sure that they talk about the cost of those things, because all seniors don't have deep pockets. And while there's a lot of great options out there, I think there's a pretty healthy price tag that goes with several of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point.
Right. Okay. So one of the other things Jackie and I wanted to just check with you all on is just the process for developing your recommendations from your work this year. So just wanted to review how it's been working the past couple years and see if you want to use the same approach or do something different. So typically what's been happening is you all debrief, you know, after each meeting that you have, and sort of point out things that are really standing out to you. Jackie and I are taking notes, you know, that we share back with you all so you can review. And then when we get to sort of end of summer, early fall, Jackie and I will go back through the notes and try to compile recommendations based off of what you all have said, you know, in your debriefs throughout the year. And then we'll share that to you and you all can help us revise and get to a list of final recommendations. So I think the question is that the same approach you'd like to use this year? Do you want to do something else? We are totally open, but now's a good time to figure that out before we are, you know, need to be working on them.
Well, I'll go ahead and start. I think you've done an admiral's job getting us those annual reports over the last 3 years that I've been on the commission. I'm one of those, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, and dirt sure ain't broke. One thing, though, that I think we could benefit by, and this kind of leads from the City of Vancouver Council meeting that we had a couple weeks ago, where we had a lot of input. I was not expecting as much input as what we got. If there's a way to summarize some of what we heard from the city councils into our package.
Okay, and you're envisioning that like as part of the annual report, Chuck, is that what you're thinking?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
And Jenna, you know, for me, just to tag on to what Chuck says, it's so important because of the growth that's going on in Clark County, it's unbelievable. I mean, the city population, I think, is 190,000 now. It's just growing. It's making sure those other cities are tied into what we do. It's reaching out to those city managers who really call the shots there, of making sure, what do you need from us? What would be helpful with your growth of your senior population within your cities? I realize we do a report to them, but it's just constantly checking in to say, hey, we're here. And as you come along, where can we be helpful in some of the work we do?
Okay, great. Anyone else, any thoughts either on approach to get to recommendations or in, you know, how that information is shared throughout the year? Okay. Well, sounds like we'll then try a similar approach as previous years. And if anyone thinks of anything else related to this, just let us know. And we'll go from there. Okay. All right. So this is our last topic before we're going to break. And more related to current business. So we just had a few items to just logistically run through with the group. One item was related to meeting procedures, which stems to a question we got related to bylaws. Chuck, did you want to bring this up?
Yeah, I'll go ahead. It's actually something that I kind of introduced a couple of years ago, which is if somebody's not available or not attending, to excuse them, which is more of a courtesy thing. The question is, we do have a bylaw about attendance and missing meetings. We've never, I'll call it, cracked down on that. And typically, as chair, what I would do is contact the person who was kind of becoming not available for multiple meetings and kind of get an understanding of why. But I guess the question is, do we really want to do this courtesy excusing people from meetings, especially if they didn't let us know they weren't going to be able to make it 30 minutes before the meeting? Understanding that, yes, there are times where, and we have a couple of members who did let us know well in advance that they had issues, family emergencies or work conflict issues coming up. So I just wanted to throw that out there. If there's any concerns about that type of practice, if there's something that we should just maybe get a little bit more back to the bylaws on meeting attendance, if there's any issues with the third Wednesday of the month being the time of our meeting. So just to throw it out there for general, kind of a quick general discussion.
This is, has there been a problem with attendance in the last, I've been on the commission 2 years at all?
Yeah, and actually I did ask Jenna and Jackie to go back and to our attendance roll call for this year. And I believe that we've had a couple of isolated instances, but I thought, and Jenna, maybe you can correct me, is that we haven't found a member that has missed the 3 meetings in a row or 4 meetings over the course of a year that would trigger that concern level. Is that correct?
I actually think this meeting, it may actually be the 4th absence of one member because of today. But we can talk about that in more detail, Chuck. On the side, if you want. So we've had some folks who it's been close to the 4 in a year in the past, which is when this gets raised, I think. So so that's where we're at.
And maybe I need to know who that is offline, and maybe I can contact and find out if there's any issues with only 9 people being on the commission, and if we have one member not available, it kind of dilutes a little bit of our abilities and lessens our bandwidth as we take on liaison roles. So I just wanted to see if there's any other concerns that we need to put on the table, or bring up to me so I can work with the people who might be having attendance issues.
So back to your original question was, Should the bylaws stay the same relating to attendance, or should we change it in some way? Was that what you're thinking?
Well, it was more of the, it was a kind of a courtesy protocol that we kind of, I'm the guilty party of starting it, but over the last couple of years, we've moved to excuse absentee members for those meetings. And the question is, well, what does that really do? It really doesn't do anything other than it recognizes that people have had have let us know well in advance that they would not be attending. We don't need to continue that practice as more of a courtesy practice. And I know that for various city councils, they do things like that, sometimes out of courtesy, sometimes out of attendance tracking. So it's more of a question, do we want to continue that, or we just want to not do it and just note the absence and move on?
Well, I'm comfortable with noting the absence and moving on, but I think if there's a consistent non-attendance by somebody, then I think that courtesy outreach to figure out what's going on is going to be necessary, because you're right, we need everybody on board. Do happen, and you can't attend, but if it's consistent, then I think that discussion should be had, and maybe people decide if they can continue on the commission or not.
And I'm inclined to agree with you, Pam, on that. I'm sort of one of these types of folks to give people the benefit of the doubt, because it's been a tough couple of years. You know, the pandemics, people's schedules are all screwed up and so forth. And I understand that. And a lot of Zoom meetings going back and forth, duplication of meetings and so forth. So, Pam, it sort of makes sense that we may want to come back to revisit this, but I just need to, just what Chuck says, you know, to stress the importance of making these meetings, because they are critical. We have 9 folks and we meet once a month, and we're all involved in other activities representing the commission, and we need to hear from one another what's going on.
Hey, I just have a question.
Yeah.
Has meeting attendance been better or worse or the same since we've gone to the Zoom meetings?
And maybe that's a good question. Yeah. I think we'd have to go double check to be able to answer that for sure.
I wish we would have had this when I was missing those meetings in 2019 when I was in Laos, because this would have been awesome rather than relying on a speakerphone. But why don't we check into that? I'm going to suggest that maybe we discontinue the courtesy practice of excusing members. It's maybe raising more questions than it's meant to do. But we do track, and as chair, or whoever succeeds me as chair in the future, it would be nice to know, you know, if we have, because I don't keep attendance myself. I defer to county staff to do that. But if we know after 3 absences, or even after 2 absences in a row, maybe it's time for a courtesy call just to see if there's anything that we can help them with, or find out if there's something going on.
All right. I think that sounds good. Chuck, and if anyone thinks of anything else, feel free to get in touch with Chuck after the meeting as well. So just, I think a few other things we wanted to point out, Chuck just mentioned chair, vice chair. So elections for chair and vice chair are an annual thing per your bylaws. So those elections would take place at your July meeting. And so the way the process works is that before your next meeting in July, Jackie or I will send out an email that's asking for anybody who's interested in either of those roles to let us know and send us a blurb, you know, explaining your interest in the role.
And then we'll compile those and share them back with the whole group prior to the meeting, so you'll know who's interested in the roles. And then the actual voting would take place during the regular July meeting. And those, whoever's elected would start with the August meeting. So the current chair and vice chair serve through July, and then the switch happens for August. So that opportunity is coming up for anyone who's interested. And then also,
jump in here, Jenna, before you get to liaison?
Sure, go ahead.
I just want to let people know I'm one of those who likes to see a rotating chair and vice chair. I'd like to give other people opportunities. I've served as 2 years now, either vice chair or chair. And so I would definitely be interested in rotating somebody else into the role of chair. Obviously, if we can't find a volunteer, I would definitely be interested in staying in that. But just for those who might be looking at a time to jump in and test it, now's your opportunity.
Let me second that, as well as being chair and vice chair. I think it's really important. Many of you belong to different organizations, is to rotate that leadership. I say it's so valuable. And it's helpful, and it sends out a positive message that, you know, that one person is not dominating the agenda and dictating the direction of the commission. That the commission is made up of 9 individuals, and all of them have the ability and capability to be leaders. So I hope folks think about that, because I think it just makes us stronger.
And is it a 1-year term?
Yeah, it's a 1-year term, but you're eligible to, you know, be interested for multiple years. So we've had folks serve, you know, for 2 years who were interested in the role and got elected each year. But yeah, it's a 1-year term.
Okay.
And I was chair, and then Chuck was my vice chair, and we flip-flopped. So it worked out very well, because we're able to obviously to cover one another.
Great. Okay, so then I'll move us to liaison roles. So these are positions where where there's been commission members who have regular attendance with another group and then can report back to this group in a liaison-like role. These are, you know, entirely optional, up to the group on what's of interest and what seems important to you for, you know, partnership building in the community. So the Aging and Disabilities Resource Network, Tanya and Nancy have been tag teaming on this. It has quarterly meetings. It's run by the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington. Public Health, Amy's been the liaison with that group. She has monthly calls with her contact there and then provides reports back to the commission. And then the Accessible Transportation Coalition, I think Chuck and maybe Tanya's your backup for that one, have been serving, attending those meetings. So we can send out an email too with a little bit more detail on these. I think the main questions for us is, you know, if you're in a liaison role, are you interested in continuing in it or not? And then I think the other option, you know, it's also a good opportunity if, are there other groups that you think we should be having a liaison, you know, role with? So just let us know about those things. And like Jackie and I, we'll send you an email you can reply to, so you don't need to think about it right now. But just as a good, we want to pause and see if we want to change anything.
Could we put this on the July work session agenda to talk about these liaison roles?
Sure. So I think we are ready for a break. It's 4:36. Can folks be back by about 4:40? And we're gonna switch gears and talk about 2022 after the break. Does that sound all right for everyone? Okay.
Bye.
Okay. All right, so we are gonna switch gears here. So we're gonna forget about this year and we're gonna jump and think about next year, so 2022. And even though it still seems like it's a far away, this is about when some decisions we need from you all to help Jackie and I start planning and getting ready for next year. We got a lot of feedback in the survey when we asked the question about ideas on the focus for what could it be for 2022. So I think what we'd like to do is just start by sharing what you all said so you all can hear it and see it, because you didn't have a chance to look at it beforehand. And then I think we'll open it up for the discussion on, you know, is it clear what the focus should be? Or, you know, or do we, like, what needs to happen for us to help to figure it out and get there? So I'll just start by, I'll read out some of the key excerpts from folks' responses. And we've got a few slides because there are a lot of ideas. We could complete the work of focusing on major areas by looking at community engagement for 2022. We might also want to continue to reach out to towns in Clark County and present information about our goals, et cetera, during council meetings. I would happily focus on community engagement as that topic is near and dear to my heart, but I look forward to hearing my seasoned commission colleagues and will enthusiastically work towards any focus area that will serve Clark County residents. Partnerships, public and private sector / interconnectedness of prior areas of focus. All prior topics are critically important in their own right and intimately connected. I wonder if there may be a way to bring in speakers from across the US or globe to speak on success in a fully integrated community where older adults are not forgotten. Not sure this is even possible, but if we are trying to build a best-in-class county for older adults, I'm not even sure I know what that looks like. But what does appear to be true is it is not just about older adults, it is about weaving older adults into the frame of society as important players and not the forgotten. Other topics ideas include loneliness, aging workforce, age discrimination, financial health, retirement, what is the new view of retiring, volunteerism. I think it may be useful to ask ourselves what change do we hope to see at the end of the year and what do we see as success and then work backwards from there. Revisit housing and transportation as they are changing with more housing being built and transportation needs for newly built areas. Lessons learned from COVID-19 and its impact on our senior population. I'd like to see aging readiness plan at 10. What have we learned? Where do we go from here? Technology. Internet access and communication support for seniors. Partnerships with younger students and seniors, such as pen pals or visits and communication to help combat isolation. Delivery of healthcare and medical services that reduce impact on Vancouver Fire. Program of volunteer attorneys / workshops to assist seniors in preparing their wills and medical directives and so forth to pass on assets, such as those resulting from deaths during the pandemic. And a survey of seniors to determine their needs and wants. Affordable housing and mental health, which also involves community engagement, healthy communities, et cetera. Another thought about affordable housing could be to create middle housing like the Senate Bill 458 to allow splitting of lots to sell smaller homes to encourage middle housing. Okay, so thank you all again for your thoughts. What I've got on this slide here is taking your paragraph form and trying to just pull out the like topics, you know, at a higher level. Hopefully we've captured what everyone said, at least at a high level on the slide for the full list of ideas. So I think first question is there anything anyone wants to add to this list before we discuss what the focus might be?
Jenna, we had a rather lively discussion with Vancouver City Council. And I know one of the topics that they requested was I'm not sure what it is. It's the LGBTQ community and impacts on older LGBTQ adults, and maybe just in general, but all definitely because of COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Chuck, I think the other thing that came up in that meeting was about the outbreaks in nursing homes. And I don't know if that's more of a this year versus a next year topic, but
yeah, I think that was more related to what's going on right now.
Okay. Okay. Anyone, anything else you want to add to the list? Okay. So I think that the next question is sort of looking at all of these ideas. What do you notice? You know, is there something jumping off the page to you, you know, as a, this seems to be a pattern or a theme that brings some of these things together? Yeah, let's just open it up for what you're thinking based on this input.
Just a, Jenna, first of all, just a comment that it's important is I just cannot memorize partnerships, public and private, because as we expand and more services come online, there's a tendency sometimes to duplicate those services. And we got to be very careful about that. When I was in city council, we saw that quite a bit, and the duplication of services. And as I said, there's going to be a lot more services, nonprofits coming in here. And then some of those nonprofits get caught up in mission creep, get away from what they're supposed to be doing. And it's really, and government, what they're doing in addition. And we just talked about the additional services that are coming, housing and so forth. It's being conscious and sensitive of making sure that those partnerships are there and that we're not duplicating services, because that becomes, to me, a waste of money if we're not really prioritizing the efforts of what's important. Just a comment about that, because it's so common. As I said, as we move forward and the aging population moves forward, there will be a lot of nonprofits, I think, that are going to start originating, coming out. It's making sure that those nonprofits do their homework and find out who else is providing that particular services and where can we combine those services to strengthen them and make them better. Just a comment.
Thanks, Larry.
I think adding on to, you know, what Larry had said, that civic engagement I see and is woven through many of these areas, and that's obviously my perspective from things initially, but you know, understanding the role of volunteerism, of community organizations working together, but then also in a way thinking about the sharing of ideas and practices, and oftentimes, at least in my experience elsewhere, is that you do find a huge number of community organizations that sort of grow and wane based upon how money is able to be secured for those different organizations. And so really thinking about the ways in which organizations are funded, those types of funding streams, and I guess encouraging organizations to work together as clusters or as groups. And that sort of gets at what Larry was saying about how there's a great deal of duplication. And so that's sort of a larger idea, thinking about foundation funding and city funding and how to use those things best. But it also requires a great deal of education at the levels of within organizations and of volunteers, of knowing how things could fit together well and people could work together well.
I want to pick up from what Cass was saying, because I'm seeing, and I want to expand. I think she's seeing a theme, and I'm seeing it too, but I want to expand on it. I'm seeing a theme not only of partnerships that Larry's talking about or volunteer support, but also advocacy. What we've heard throughout the last part of last year and the part this year is it's a difficult system to navigate any of these ways. And having advocates or even coordination of services and a central repository of where you can get a hold of these services has been a big thread that I've seen going through our work in 2021, as well as what we're looking for in 2022.
And is it advocacy also a part of the focus area under engagement? I think it's engagement / advocacy. So is that combined community engagement?
And that could be. I just got an email from Megan that she lost audio, is trying to dial back in. I think she's back.
I'm back. I'm so sorry. I just didn't want you to hear the beep and sorry for the distraction.
Maybe perhaps adding a little bit to that question there. The advocacy is hugely tied to really strong community-based practice. And organizations who educate particularly their volunteers as to what the larger overreaching issues are, and understand that volunteers will create a really strong emotional bond to the work that they're doing, and therefore a great deal of advocacy and really great informed advocacy can grow out of that. So yeah, it's oftentimes you can see that where organizations take that time to really work with volunteers and really educate and do a great deal of connection, that they have a huge surge of sort of a emotion and workforce behind them to be able to move their agendas forward.
I'd just like to say that I was really excited and encouraged to see the things that came out of the brainstorming from the survey. But I really feel like we need more time than we're going to have today to really kind of put these things through the ringer and come up with a cohesive plan to move forward on them. And I know our time is tight and precious, but I almost think that we need another session or a small group to work on this and bring something back to the larger group, because I see there's so much potential in this, and I don't want to just give it short shrift.
Mm-hmm. I like that idea of forming a subcommittee of 3 or 4 to kind of congeal these. I think we are getting, I've experienced editing by committee before, and after this one is done, I'm peeling off to one who has done that. I think having 3 or 4 people take what we've talked about here, I would be all in favor of doing something like that too.
Can I ask a clarifying question on, is there general support for this idea of engagement and advocacy partnerships as an overarching idea? I know that's not fully fleshed out, but like I heard multiple people say things along those lines. I just sort of want to check if there's general support for that idea, that that's what a subgroup would be working under that premise, or is that not the case?
I guess I'm also wanting to recognize there's 2 of our members who aren't here, so we're missing their input at the workshop on this. But I could see that being an overarching topic for next year. And then there's advocacy in each one of these categories that are on here. You know, how do you get transportation? How do you get around? How do you get, how do you work if you've got financial issues? So I can see an overarching topic where we do find monthly discussions under some of these.
And I think that is one of the focus areas. That's the focus area that got canceled this year because of COVID. So I think if we can elaborate and decide what falls under that, then we're finishing up the plan, so to speak, with the last focus component.
Okay. All right. Anyone have any concerns or things you want to add on to this idea of having, we've got a sort of idea of an overarching theme, but then we'll have a couple people try to now bring some threads together based on all of the input and then bring that back to the group.
That works for me.
Okay. Before we move to the next topic, does anyone want to volunteer to be on that subcommittee? Okay, I see Franklin, Cass. And we can check with Nancy and Tanya.
I think, well. Yes, one of them, I believe, would more than be happy to jump into that because they're visionary with this regard.
Okay. Did I miss anyone else?
Yeah, Jen, if that doesn't happen and those two get an opportunity, use me as a backup.
Okay. Okay. Anyone have anything else to add on this, or should we talk about the aging readiness plan, which is our next item? Okay. Keep us moving along. Okay. So, one of your other survey questions was about what to do about the aging readiness plan, because it's about to be 10 years old. So you had 5 options in the survey to sort of rank and in order of preference. We don't want you to feel wedded to how you rated them the other day when you were filling out the survey, but wanted to use it as a conversation starter. Just a quick review. So we had one option that was about, you know, doing a comprehensive update to the plan and maybe even adding new chapters to it. There was another option about doing a more limited update based on information that's been gathered since the 2016 year-long focus areas or focus studies. And sort of an alternative approach to that would be also like a limited approach, but by adding an insert at the end of each chapter with updated information. There was an option to do nothing and just keep working under the current plan, and then, or to do something else that's not on this list. So we did very rough scoring of how you all ordered them. So if you ordered something at the top, we gave it 5 points. If it was second on your list, we gave it 4 points and so forth. So that's where the scoring came from, to just give you a sense of what people were thinking. So I think our question for you all is, what additional information or discussions do you feel like this group needs to have before you really decide on your preferred option?
Jenna, can you talk about, I requested what happened in 2011, 2012. Could you give a quick update as to what that work plan, I know it's probably a lot broader than what we are talking about here because it's creating the first ever plan, but can you give an indication of what that was like, how much effort it was?
Yeah, we can do that. And before we go there, are there any other questions or things other folks want to hear more about? Okay, we'll start there, then if you think of other questions after. So Jackie, can you share a bit about, so Jackie was around when
and involved when the 2012, the first plan was written. So she's going to share a bit about what that looked like and involved and things like that.
Okay, so at that point, so as I think Chuck mentioned at the beginning, or someone did about, maybe it was Larry, Commissioner Bolt at the time was the commissioner, Clark County Commissioner, that initiated this effort to begin this project, the Aging Readiness Plan, to develop an Aging Readiness Plan. So he requested that community planning kind of lead that effort as our role with long range and comprehensive planning. We do a lot of community outreach. So we were tasked to do that with partnership with the Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities. But we were kind of the lead role on that with their participation throughout the whole process. So the scope was pretty large, and it included, you know, we had we started with 25, we ended with 24 member task force that met every other month for I think about a year and a half. And in between those months, we held community workshops. So we had five, so one for each of the topics of the Aging Readiness Plan. So, and in between that, we also had committees that were working after each of the community workshops on kind of developing what the strategies that they heard and gleaned from those community workshops to develop those chapters for the Aging Readiness Plan. So it's pretty intense. The community workshops were always kind of like your summits, had a keynote, a panel of some sort, and, you know, about 100 members of the public attending and doing, you know, almost like charrette type of engagement where kind of like some of your summits where you're writing things down and you're, you know, talking and discussing. So, you know, organizing those and then just the bi-monthly task force meetings and then the committees. There was also, you know, work with the cities and outreach to them because each of the cities provided a letter of support at the end of the process. There was also a large, at the very end, a big event that presented the final plan to the public. And then just like throughout there's a lot of staff resources of supporting the workshops and the task force meetings, as well as since the Aging Readiness Plan really covers all types of topics, and which was great to, we were able to coordinate with so many different county departments, bringing in staff from different organizations, not only in the county, but in our community. So it was, I remember Colette, she was the lead, if you all remember Colette, on this project. And, you know, she was referred to it almost like a mini comp plan, just how she had, you know, how she kind of managed the public process and the project, just because it had so many elements and so much outreach. So that, I mean, that was to get it going. So a pretty robust, pretty resource, not money per se, but staff time and resource were definitely a piece of it. It was, you know, driven by the county commission at the time. I'm happy to answer any questions about any piece of that as well.
Jackie, given the situation that we're in now where we're basically meeting virtually, what do you see the likelihood of even a scaled down version of that working given the environment we're in now?
It definitely be more challenging, or well, it's hard to say, right? We haven't quite done that large of a public process yet. We started to with some of the other projects community planning's doing, but we haven't done like bi-monthly huge public meetings like that. So it's hard to say, Franklin. I'm not sure.
I want to keep in mind, this is for 2022, not starting in July. This is starting in January 2022. And I assume we'd be meeting in person by then. So I want to get that, you know, that clarification out there. I guess the other couple of questions I would have to follow up are, what did it take to get the work plan approved? Because that would mean dedicated staff like you and Colette. And then secondly, what's the ability to bring in those groups that were like Area-Wide Agency on Aging and Disabilities and others, the Human Services Council? Sounds to me like we could have a joint task force with them as part of this session if they were already part of the task force last year or last mm-hmm. time.
Last time. Yeah, I think, you know, at that point, it was a county, like for our department, community planning, we have our work plan, annual work plan approved by the council. And they also are ones that add to our work plan, right? So we do a lot of council specific projects that they wanna accomplish. As well, and then in addition to the things that we you know, regularly do, like comprehensive plan change, land use changes, or the Commission on Aging, historic preservation, the code changes, things like that. So this would be something that would have to be proposed first, kind of proposed to the community planning director, Oliver Jaco, to see if he would have room and resources on his work plan to even propose to the council. And then the council, you know, they're the ultimate decision making on what community planning does for the year. Regarding other outside organizations, you know, that's just a, you know, a call, a conversation about, you know, proposing that. But we'd have to get a little bit further, I think, down the road on the scope and what the project would be and how we at community planning could support it.
Can I just make a quick confession?
Yeah.
I did not, when I filled this out yesterday, I did not take into consideration what was meant by comprehensive versus limited. And I did not take into consideration all the impacts that it might be on you and Jenna. So, and I can only speak for myself. Since both of those things were rated pretty high, I would not be wedded to the comprehensive update as yet. I look at the lessons that we learned through COVID, and to me, I think COVID basically pointed out what was working and where there's holes. And my approach would be just to basically look at reinforcing what's working and looking at whether there's any realistic options for filling in those holes. And so I don't know if that fits into comprehensive or limited or whatever. So I have to confess, I didn't take all those things into consideration yesterday. So if we fill this out again today, I might vote a little differently.
Yeah, no worries.
Let me just tack on to what you just said, Franklin. That's a concern. Being around many different comprehensive studies when I was in city council, sometimes you got to be careful because it will drain the staff. And what does that comprehensive look like? And it's the verbiage. What does limited mean? Limited means different things to different folks. And what is to be gained from it? I mean, the readiness plan, how it will be used, and what information will be used, and where can we make the most impact? So what you just said, Franklin, is very good. I mean, as I said, I really understand it and get that. Because as I said, it will drain the staff. And I'm thinking about all the other organizations that are coming back together that are going to start to look and reevaluate your strategic plans and so forth. Is where are we in this mix? And where is the planning, the development department going to be? And where is the council's going to be on it? And what's important to them? Because is it this not important to them? Are we wasting our time to put this much effort into it? And I don't know where that is. I don't know what the answer is to that.
I know, as a sort of a new person here, I found when I read the Aging Readiness Plan, I found it a wonderful read and really comprehensive and really interesting, and it raised a lot of thoughts. And it would be an interesting thing to continue using that text as the foundation, and then to really weigh that against the lessons that we've learned or the things that we see have changed, and then to see if we can almost take those into the future. You know, would we find those same things? How could we navigate the changes that we see? And aren't those really interesting, and kind of dive into that? That may lead us down some interesting predictive roads or some helpful roads of who to ask, how we can move into the future in really effective ways.
Yeah, Jackie, when does Oliver put his work plan together for the next year?
It typically happens in the fall. I think we've mapped this out for you guys. So I think we have a schedule somewhere that we knew that, like, we'd want to give something by the end of August or something. Does that sound right, Jenna?
I think so. I think August is in my head for when we'd need to know what you all wanted to pitch to him so that he would have time in the fall to present to council.
Yeah, so I guess a couple things. Maybe could we invite Oliver to next month's work session and kind of talk through? Because we're kind of flying blind. We're not all planners. So, you know, we weren't involved with the original process. Some of us have done planning and know what it takes, but what I don't know is what Oliver and community planning's bandwidth is to do anything. So I don't know what else is coming up, but also it'd be nice to get his read on number one versus number two, and knowing, since I know he was around for the first plan, what his thought would be.
Yeah, we can definitely invite him. He's going out of home to Nigeria for a bit, but he will be back, I think, by your July meeting.
And what do the other commissioners think about maybe having him join us for maybe half of our next month's work session?
I think that'd be super. He's got a good perspective on it, workload, mm-hmm. staff, priorities, so forth. I think he would provide some wealth of information that would help us in making our decision.
And would you, Jackie, would you just remind me who he is and what his role is?
Sure. Oliver is the director of community planning. So he's Jenna and my boss. And so he leads our department that manages our long range planning, growth management, comprehensive plan. So he's under our department. We have we do the long range planning, mm-hmm. Commission on Aging, Historic Preservation, coordinate transportation planning, and Planning Commission.
Great, that's really helpful. So he'll have the big picture in terms of what may be doable and what not.
Right.
Yeah, thank you.
Franklin, did you have a question?
Well, I guess more of a comment. I think we also have to be careful in the point that Larry made about basically all these organizations and entities kind of waking up after COVID and putting new plans and stuff together. We want to be careful about what's realistic to propose. We don't want to invest, you know, so much effort that we swamp, you know, Jack and Jenna. But at the same time, we have to recognize that there's going to be other competing interests, and we need to shape whatever we're going to do in a posture of having it accepted and endorsed versus just being more noise to compete among all of the new issues. That's all I had.
And I will let you know what I know for at least on the community planning side, as I've talked about the comprehensive plan. So that's a big project we do every 8 years, required by state law, and our next update is due in 25, but it's a 3-year process. So We will begin that process most likely sometime next year. Which is all hands on deck.
Well, is the aging readiness plan considered a component of the comprehensive plan?
It's a related document, yes.
So it might give an opportunity to provide an update of some type for that would feed the eventual comp plan update.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think that's kind of pseudo direction. I'm not sure exactly how to frame it,
So it sounds like we'll connect with Oliver and see if he can join the July meeting. And that it sounds like, right, a little bit more understanding between a comprehensive versus limited. And I think that's essentially where we are, and you all then know you'd have to, if you wanted to pitch something, you'd have to make that decision by August on what it is you want to propose. Does that sound right?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. The July work session will give us time to discuss it and get something by August.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So we've got like 12 minutes left until at the end of the retreat. So I think what we'd like to do is we want to send you off. We're going to split you into two groups, send you off into two little breakout rooms for like 10 minutes, and then we'll bring you back for the last 2 minutes. And what we just want to give you all time to do is, I think, maybe just debrief what just happened a little bit. What questions are you now thinking about? Really just an opportunity to exchange any final additional thoughts, questions, and then we'll regroup at the end, and you can share back any sort of, you know, really key standout things that you think the whole group needs to hear. But let's just use this as a time to, in a little bit more intimate setting, let you all talk amongst yourselves on just sort of like what just happened, you know, what are you wondering, things like that. Okay, so hopefully this works. You're gonna get a message on your computer about joining a breakout room. And so you're gonna click and say, join now. And then we will bring you back all together at the end. So you'll see the alerts on your computer screen with that happening. And if something happens, Jackie and I will show up and try to figure it out. So anyone unclear about what we're doing?
Are you going to
facilitating?
Are you sending a join message to our email like you did for this session?
No, it's going to just show up on your screen. It's going to be like a pop-up window. That's going to just click join. So you're just going to be sent off in a small group with other commission members and really just use it as a time to debrief. Jackie and I will not be there. So just to just sort of debrief what just happened the last 2 hours, you know, any outstanding questions or additional thoughts you're thinking that maybe you don't know where they fit, but you want to share. Okay.
Perfect.
Okay, so here we go. We'll see you in about 10 minutes.